Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Elveson with the Digital Education Podcast, doing a series, and I know a couple people have listened in or starting to listen in, doing a series on asking the question, what's next? What's coming? What can we see ahead of us? What can we prognosticate? And it's also a fun time for me to catch up with friends who are really busy doing really good work. And so today, for this question and this conversation, I'm with Daniel Pampuk from Australia. He's the Executive Director of Christian Schools Australia. Daniel, I'm going to kick it right to you. And you know, as you kind of think about what your situation is in education, and all these questions and all this craziness that's coming, what do you see as what's coming and what's next?
Yeah, thanks, Eric. I think probably the biggest issue that or thing that we've noticed in Australia is that there's been a lot of talk around people doing 21st century learning. And I think they had all the toys, but they actually weren't utilizing those. And so as schools have moved to off-site learning, let's put it that way, because that covers a whole multitude of applications. We've seen that education has still been very much teacher-centered. The tools have very much just been aids on the side in terms of what's taking place. And as they've moved to this off-site learning, which has got a blended approach for many of them, including using LMSs and using Zoom and a whole range of other tools, they've realised that they haven't been utilized in the right way. So they've rushed to go online. They've realized, I think, as well, that the environment is in a completely different environment to what they expected, that to try and transfer a classroom as is, which is a 20th century classroom online, is a completely exhausting and overwhelming approach. And I think it's highlighted that move that, one, that we are still only using 20th century approaches, that two, it's very teacher-centered in terms of what's taken place. And I'd say the third thing is that it's a lot of busy work, a lot of work just, you know, completing tasks, etc., that really are time-consuming, but I would have to question their actual educational worth. So what's coming ahead? And I think, look, if we are wise and we learn from this transition, we will understand that we need to be putting the students into the centre, and I think this is a big thing. What the work that we're setting, that less is more, that if we actually are doing the right type of work with students, then this is something that is more self-directed, it's more inquiry-based, it's more project-based, and then it really is then starting to lead in 21st century skills. And I think there is an awareness around there where we're sending students out for the concepts of collaboration, the concepts of you know, being empowered, creativity, critical thinking, you know, the communication, the information literacy, the media literacy, the technology literacy, all become central in terms of their skill sets going forward. So I think what we will find is that for schools who are wise, that they will start to recognise that there are a lot more opportunities ahead in terms of student learning that they haven't embraced. So I also believe that what's ahead is that we have accelerated the change. So for many schools, what they've done in 5 days equals about 5 years of change in a normal context. And that has surprised, encouraged, challenged many school leaders because as we've tried to do change management or school improvement, that we've often encountered schools that have been very slow, they've been hard to move, they haven't been agile and adaptive, though we'd love to think ourselves as responsive and adaptive and being flexible, that we haven't been. I think some of our international schools have had an advantage over us because as staff have come in, they've had a month or two to learn the culture, to get on board with what's happening, because the view was in 2 years they could be gone back to another to back home or to another country. And so there was no luxury of thinking, oh, we'll just do this slowly or roll this out. So I think there'll be a real challenge in schools to say, you know what, we need to be changing much quicker than what we have been before and adopting and taking on elements. I think we'll see a retiring out of staff. I think staff will, once this becomes the norm, there'll be a number of staff who'll say, oh, this is a good time for me to retire out. I'm not really keen to use these tools. I'm not really keen to flip the classroom or blend the classroom or you know, focus on a whole range of different skill sets. I was a classic 20th century teacher, and I think now this is my time to tap out as well. I think the other one that we will look at that will be quite differently is the way that the concepts around how we do community will be very different. I think for the first time we will realise the absolute focus and the essential element the community relationship has been for our schools, which we've taken for granted, which we haven't appreciated. And even now, I think schools are being challenged as how do we connect students in meaningful ways? And that may be individually with teachers, it may be in small groups to do devotions or pastoral care, it could be chapels and assemblies. And the way that we do those will be different. And I'm fascinated to see how this impacts our parent community, because often we have forced our parents to come to us and say, right, we are the font of knowledge, we are the school on high. Come bow before us and we will give you feedback upon your child and about how everything's going. And now, as we've seen in banking, that banking goes to its customers and has to be very much individualised. And so not only will learning become more individualised for students, but it'll become more individualised for parents as well. And I think it'll be very interesting where we'll have some parents maybe do parent-teacher interviews, which will be in person, and some maybe online, where we're doing it in their homes, that we will have parent-teacher conferences, etc., that are very much based around the needs of the parent and an appreciation of that their context is different than their central to the learning experience. I think in terms of the biblical and Christian distinctive, I think that's again is something else where we will now have a range of tools and ability to be able to encourage the development of children's faith, of connecting as well, and finding out ways of how do you do that where, again, it's not person-dependent, where we are genuinely embodying that in the way that we teach, in the way that we set up structures, in the way that we engage with people, which really reflects our Christian walk and distinctive. I can't think of anything more Christian than individualized, personalized education, where we are actually thinking of the one. And that's a real challenge in terms of our Christian walk, where we're very much focused on the 99. As long as we get the 99 across into the next field, that's fine. And this is the now, it gives us the opportunity, but also the challenge of saying, in terms of 21st century learning, how is this individualised and personalised for that learner and catering to their needs? And that's a very powerful Christian witness.
So let me ask one clarifying question, because you talk about some really interesting things that I always love talking with you, and we could go in and we could go on and on. But for this sake, the clarifying question is, you made a comment that we've made 5 years worth of change in 5 days.
Yeah.
And I know in talking with you about these things in the past and hearing you speak about change and change management and just innovation, a lot of times we can make the change, but then we revert back.
Yeah.
How do we just kind of, and some of it is, how can we kind of get through this period of change? But then how do we make sure that, you know, the good change and some of the change that we want sticks?
Yeah. Look, I think there's a couple of things. It's about what are you doing right now that really determines what the future will hold and how that will look in the future. And I think the first one I would be talking about is managing the messaging with our families and our parents is a really important one. We need to be communicating why we're changing, and we need to be communicating how we're changing, and communicating when we review what we've done to make the next decisions around that. And in part of that, there's a clarification, because people need, in terms of times of ambiguity and uncertainty, people need to have a leader and teachers who can handle ambiguity and rise above that and say, yes, it is a time of uncertainty and a time of change, but this is the approach we're taking. This is the, we provide the guidance or the anchor in this storm, as it may be. Part of that then at the start is to manage the expectation of staff and students and parents. So when this remote learning, and I talk remote learning means being off-site, because some people are using packages to send to little children, some are using synchronous days, which have all been timetabled out and very Zoom-dependent, others are using learning management systems and a whole lot of online tools. some schools are blending all of those approaches in terms of trying to meet the needs and following an asynchronous approach. But in the midst of that, we then have to say to the parents, what are the expectations that you actually have around learning? And so I think a few of our parents thought that when schools went remote, that they would sit their child in front of a screen, and that for 8 hours there would be a cavalcade of excellent teachers to inspire and amaze their child all day long until the end of the day. And we worked out that actually really wasn't going to be the way. A, that wasn't good learning to start with, and again, educating or changing expectations for parents. Students have a very different view. Their fear is that they won't complete the core work that they needed to do, and that they will be left with an inability to progress to the next year level, or an inability to matriculate and to go on to tertiary options. And staff have an expectation there that their work day will still look exactly the same as it did before. That, you know, I've planned this way, and I've operated this way, and that almost I have a right that this shall stay the same. And for some have even gone to their unions to say, you know, I'm not pleased about this. I'm not pleased that I've been asked by my school or my leadership to do things differently. And so that conveying to people it's not business as usual is a really key point. And so if we're wanting people to change and to embrace change and to retain that change, we have to get those, have to do some expectation management. But the final thing I would be saying is that we have to be able to look at what the new value proposition is. People were very clear about what their old value proposition was in terms of a very stable, almost old-fashioned structure with traditional values and approaches and, you know, all the hallmarks of yesteryear. And many people were willing to pay for that. And it's good. It's like being part of a little town. And, you know, I love the way that they build community and their character and the way that students raise together. And there's a whole set of pieces attached to that. The second one is that there's also a certainty around that I'm going to get a product at the end of this, and my child is going to come out speaking nicely, good values, results to take them on for a good job in the workforce or onto tertiaries. And I think that's being shattered a little bit as well, to say that value expectation is something very different. And schools have got who will be able to embed change are identifying what that new value proposition is right now. What are the different things that they're doing? So they're asking questions like, what is the school doing now that it could not do before? It's a great question to ask. How is the learning developing a new set of skills and competence for students? How are students being prepared for the workforce society of the future? And what have been the opportunities of educational advancement across the school? And so that is really important, because if we can convey that value proposition to our parents, A, they will keep paying school fees. And I've heard right around the world where parents are saying, well, I'm doing this online learning now and it's not really up to scratch compared to the on-site learning, so I shouldn't have to pay school fees, or at least I should get a 50% discount, and the stories go on. And I would say to leaders, then you haven't conveyed what the new value proposition is. And often you haven't conveyed the value proposition because you actually don't know what the new value proposition is. And so you and your team need to sit down and work out very clearly what is the new value that you're offering right now in terms of the choices that you're making and the types of learning that's taking place. And that works then for the students as well, because students convey to their parents are a barometer of whether the school is doing well or not. A happy student means that your parents, more often than not, are happy with what's happening at the school as well. And that's not to say that they're frolicking around their backyard going, oh, this is a joy to behold. What it's saying is that they have a confidence that they are getting an education that will help them proceed to the next year level, to proceed on to something that's of value. And so there's that value proposition for the student. This is good learning. We're covering not just content, but core concepts and approaches and learning techniques, et cetera, that are going to keep us in good stead, not only just for the next part of your education, but for life and what comes after schooling. And finally, if we are clear about that value expectation or value proposition, I should say, for teachers, there is a compelling reason for change. We're not just changing because COVID-19 is here. We're not changing. Yes, it's a motivating factor, and it really put a fire underneath us to get us up and moving and mobile. But that got us up and moving and mobile to continue us moving on that journey. We have to understand what that value proposition is. And so we continue down this path, and I use the expression of milestones to maturity, and we're ticking off what each of those milestones look like as we progress along that pathway. So that I can continue to keep my staff agile and moving and developing and forward focused. And so in a sense, you can do that with staff in terms of embedding that change by saying, we had a triage response, we got panicked, we saw an emergency and a crisis, we got up and moved forward. We then went to online in terms of our teaching, which was really trying to transfer an entire classroom over online. Very teacher-centered, very time-intensive, unsustainable. We then flipped that to be, let's look at the teaching that we're doing with students, and that's more like the online learning, and I think that's where schools will get up to, where we have the student at the centre. And we continue to keep moving down that path. But the clue is to know why we're changing, and the value of that change will ensure that we keep doing that and we will sustain it when we return back to the school environment.
Daniel, this is amazing. Always love talking with you. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Eric.